Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
See, it does work. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we are live and in living sound if this is Saturday, October 26th. Now, if your calendar says it's something other than Saturday, October 26th, you're listening to a recording.
Or your calendar's wrong.
Could be. Right. Right. But the point that I wanted to make is this is the recording that we're doing right now. The recording is what you would listen to. We finally figured out that if you're going to have a recording, you must have a recording first. So this
and
is
what we were doing.
This is, you know, this is a recording, so it's a recording to
right. What we were doing just a few moments ago was pre-recording.
We were pre-recording.
Pre-recording. Now we're recording.
No, we're a recording today.
Oh, a recording. Yeah. According to whom?
This is a recording. See, that's
according
it.
According to whom?
According to us.
Ah. People are either changing the channel right now or increasing their medications.
Are weaving down the highway.
Going, what has happened here?
So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach, not coincidentally, happens to be an SEC-registered investment advisor who that is in the business of managing people's investment portfolios for fees only. Isn't that disgusting?
Horribly.
Oh, fee only. At least they could earn some commissions or something. No. Anyway. And but you're also, if this is October 26th, have the right under the Constitution, under the First Amendment, to call us at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Please confine your questions and comments to the economy and the market.
Or investments.
When you ask about sports, we will show the true depths of our ignorance.
They're having some kind, aren't they having some kind of an insect contest?
Do you mean politics?
No, it has something to do with flies and balls and
pop flies
and hits.
I don't know. Haven't a clue.
There's something going on someplace.
See, now
supposedly,
you're,
but no, I just
you're
thought it
exposing
was,
the true depths of our ignorance.
Yeah, but
now.
You mentioned sports, and I knew that there's something going on, and it has something to do with flies and runs and balls. And you know, I figured that if it had
sounds unsanitary,
with flies,
unsanitary yeah, from I, every it, direction. If you ask
and,
me,
and it has the whole world is there apparently, and it's running through a serial port.
A world in a serial port with flies.
Yes. Well, it's a world series, so it's a series of worlds.
Could be.
I don't know. It's very confusing.
Very strange.
Yeah, and it has something to do with birds and flies.
I've heard a lot of comments about how foul the whole
yeah,
thing
something,
is.
Well, they are fouls because the Cardinals fall into the general heading of a fowl.
I don't even
that's
know.
That's a bird.
Yeah, yeah,
so
I understand
fowls
that.
Fowls are birds, so... And there's something to do with Cardinals. Anyway, I don't know anything about that. I just know that people are talking about it a lot, so I figured that there's something going on.
Now that you understand that we don't have a clue about that thing, we can confine our conversations to national debt and deficit, GDP, unemployment. Those are things that make sense to us.
You know, I think people generally know this time of year more about RBI than they do about GDP.
I think most times of year they know more about RBI than they do about GDP. I think most people, when they hear GDP, they don't have a anchor point. What does that even mean? What is gross domestic product? How is that even measured? How would you know what the GDP is?
It's gross.
It is gross.
And
shall we answer that question?
It has something to do with people who work in homes.
Basically, the GDP of the United States is we take...
Nobody even asked the question.
No, I did.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to... answer my own question, because that is the way that you sound smart. If you tell people only things that you know, they go, man, that guy just, he's so factually correct. I'll just confine my conversation to a very small area. He's brilliant.
Listen, if you try to explain the gross domestic product of the United States, the National Transportation Safety Board may come in and arrest
I
you.
I think I could do it fairly intellectually and interestingly set up.
There will be accidents all up and down the
highway.
Yeah,
I'll do it. It's very, very quick. Okay. It's a simple thing. It's not going to cover all the bases, but I think we can cover a lot of them.
You're only supposed to be on one base at a time.
That's that weird game that we're not going
to
be talking about.
To do with flies and birds.
Right.
And, yeah. Okay. And balls.
Right.
And somebody's going on strike in the game.
The GDP was just came out recently for the United States, and it was revised upwards. And in that revision, the Bureau of Economic Analysis...
Which is full of bureaucrats.
Yes. By definition, if you work in a bureau, you are a bureaucrat. Said that the reason why it was revised upward was because we had... more exports and less imports.
Right.
Lots more exports and lots less imports.
Right.
The GDP just basically says, what did we make that didn't exist before? Then you take away everything that we bought from somebody else that's not in the country. And you add anything that we sell to people that are not in the country.
Don't forget to subtract out all inflation.
And then you take out... inflation.
And then you throw in a whole series of other really, really arcane.
Right. Well, that's the concept. And I said I was going to.
And we never know what it is until long after it happened because it gets revised.
Yes. And revised again. And again.
And the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a caller on 1-866-597-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's Chris in Georgetown.
Hello, Chris von Georgetown.
Good morning.
Good morning. I thought I'd call you early on because I have to cut the yard later on.
Oh, well.
I would suggest if it's lawn maintenance that you might want to just cut the grass because when you cut the lawn itself,
Did she say cut the yard?
He said cut the yard. If you cut the yard, you're losing square footage.
Yeah, well, you know, how many inches are you going to cut it?
Not much, because it's wintertime, so why cut it low?
Well, I mean, how many inches would you cut it? Half an inch?
I'd get rid of it if I cut all of it.
Just get rid of your yard, then. You can have a yard sale.
Well, then, you know, you'd only have 35 inches.
That's right.
If you got an inch off the yard.
Yeah.
And that would really... you realize what that would do to football games? If everybody who cut the yard...
You're just messing up our whole measurement system. Thanks
a
lot,
right.
Chris.
Anyway, Chris, go ahead. What is your question or comment?
By the way, I can't believe you guys don't watch baseball as big of a numbers guys as you are.
Well, I've never been able to figure out how the base becomes a ball.
Not at all.
It doesn't matter.
That sounded like Dr. Seuss.
I like them with the Cardinals to win anyway. So.
Cardinals. I told you there were some birds involved, and the birds were chasing
the
flies.
Foul for me.
That's the only part I could really understand about it is the bird chasing flies.
Right.
And do you go and pick up a foul ball? Because I would not want to touch.
Ooh,
It's just anyway.
Ooh, it's foul.
Very nice. Very nice.
All right. What was your question?
I was going to ask you guys again, like I was asking yesterday, about the government and the healthcare industry and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mr. McClure was saying that the...
Wait, which Mr. McClure?
Mr. McClure was saying it, yeah.
Which Mr. McClure? This is very confusing.
Oh,
there's
come on.
There's two of us in here.
There's the seniors there, and that's really, that's why he's...
Okay, so he's the mister, and I am what...
No, you said you're the older one.
Oh, well, yes, he's a clone failure. That's what's going on.
That's right.
Okay, so you wanted to talk about healthcare and...
The government.
Well, the cost of healthcare and then the government getting involved.
The government's already involved. They ain't getting involved. They are already involved.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and then I think you said last time that when healthcare started going up, when Medicare started dictating pricing. I think that's what you were saying.
Well, whether or not those two go together, a lot of people have debated about. But let me simply say that actually, if you take Medicare, you have to go all the way back like 60 years. But the prices only started going up about 40, 45 years ago. So they're really not a good correlation there. But go ahead.
So, I mean, I just don't understand how the government's going to make anything better when it comes to health care when they regulate it.
Yeah.
As far as the cost of it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like highways.
If they start regulating the cost of it, I don't see how that's going to make our health
but,
care
But they're
better.
Not regulating the cost of it anymore, and they're actually lowering the regulation of cost.
Let me come at this from – let's start at the beginning, because anytime you start a debate by saying government involvement, we have to go to the beginning on when it started. And I'm not going to go that far back, but what I will say is that Medicare finances – almost 100% of graduate medical education in the hospital. That's been going on for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to any number of well-reputed government organizations and get the numbers on this.
Well, they finance it. In fact,
what
the
I
doctors
mean by,
going through it wind up about $2 million on average in debt for a specialist. So
well, what,
there's a little financing going on for the doctors.
That's not what I mean about the financing.
Okay.
I mean as they are first employed out of the school, when
they first start
receiving their salary, the hospital gets almost 100% of that money from Medicare.
Right.
The training
so the
of
doctor, the doctors or the students are subsidized by the federal
the
government.
Not lightly subsidized, as in nearly 100% subsidized by the federal government. This is something that's been going on for decades.
You have to be very careful now. Their salaries, which are very low, while they're residents and interns,
we're talking about $30,000,
are largely paid by Medicare. The cost of the school, which they are paying for out of pocket,
correct,
they pay for, which is far, 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 far more than they're getting paid
yes.
by the government.
Yes, but that statement there,
mm-hmm.
the government's involvement in medical education is one tiny
right.
fraction.
You don't think you said medical education.
No, I said medical.
Oh, okay.
I'm bringing
right.
this up
right.
because the government's involved in our medical system from one end to the other.
You got it.
It is not a partial involvement here and here. Medicare isn't just who accepts Medicare at a hospital.
Right.
It is
if a hospital
from,
right.
even if a doctor decides not to take Medicare at some point, goes into private practice and says, I'm not going to accept Medicare for
right.
my practice. They have the right to do that. They have already received Medicare
mm-hmm.
in their education.
Right.
If a doctor comes from another country, unless they're just a very few of these other countries that the United States medical folks will recognize their degrees.
The folks.
Yes. I'm being very technical here.
Those guys. That's them.
Those doctors have to retake the whole thing. They have to go back through that residency and be paid by the federal government again. So when we talk about government involvement, I realize this is kind of off the scope of your question. I'm trying to bring the scope larger because it's not just a tiny area. When we talk about government involvement in medical anything in the United States, we have to recognize that over the last five decades, we have moved very slowly without a very nice plan in any regard to where the government is involved in almost every aspect.
Six decades.
The government's involved, so we're not talking with Obamacare. The government's suddenly involved.
Yeah, right. So my point is that if the government's been involved in all this, and healthcare has been
mm-hmm.
going up, and expense of everything has been going up,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how adding more government to it is going to make it any better.
Well, let me ask you this: the government has been more and more and more involved in highway construction for even a longer period of time. And obviously the highways have gotten worse and the expenses have gotten higher, right?
Well, can I address that?
But
I guess so. I don't know.
When we approach, for instance, this is one that...
No, it hasn't actually. It's gone down.
Rick Perry got lambasted over this one. But the toll roads, 130 in Austin, 45
mm-hmm.
in Austin.
Right.
Those are some of the nicest highways around.
Got it.
Those are private for-profit companies.
Got it.
They're doing just fine.
No, in fact, they're above expectations on early payments.
You know what? One of the great ironies, Chris, is the Republicans, the conservative Republicans, are in at least in this part of Texas, are emphatically against any form of private enterprise being involved in highway construction. It must be done by the government or not at all.
All right. And knowledge. I don't
want to argue Republicans or
no.
I don't want to argue. That's not my argument. My argument is government involvement. I understand they're involved in a lot of stuff. But it just doesn't make sense as to more and more government getting involved in our health care and it going up more and more. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, actually, since the government
going to make it any
better. Since the government got more involved, which is Obamacare, the health care prices have leveled off and are no longer rising faster than inflation.
Now, expectations in certain states are different. Let me come back to another point here. If the government's already involved and they have a whole bunch of basically unfunded mandates like they had to the states for Medicaid for years and years.
Right.
They have these unfunded mandates. They say, you will do these things and we're not going to pay you any money for it. What Obamacare had, the concept of it that came back, Nixon was one of the first people that recommended it. Reagan had a great plan on it. Basically, what the conservative idea of medical planning on the governmental level was very similar to what Texas did for the Americans with Disabilities Act. Are you familiar with this, Chris?
Yeah.
The federal government said, if you're disabled and you go into a business and you feel uncomfortable, you can sue them. Well, Texas, the legislature said, well, that's kind of vague. We need some very clear guidelines. So Texas passed a set of laws that had very clearly defined regulations on the sorts of things that businesses may be required to do for people with disabilities, which limits that lawsuit.
Right.
But by making that law, the surface of it looks like government is a lot more involved in a business now. Because they're dictating to a business, here are the things that you have to do. Well, the federal government was already that involved, maybe more so, because it was so vague. You could do as much as you wanted, and it's still. With the Texas law, we're able to now say, okay, this, if we cover all of these things that Texas has said we need to do, we won't be sued. Or if we're sued, we have good defense. With Obamacare, and I realize you've got some things to add in here, but what Obamacare here is not all of that. There were a lot of big problems. There's a lot of big bureaucracy that is probably not going to help. But there's also parts of it that are very helpful in that they're defining the things that medical professionals are supposed to do and not do. That's not saying it's a great thing. I'm saying that there are some good things in here. You had something you wanted to...
Chris, half involvement sucks, particularly at the government level. Let me get this out right here. I want to say something, and I think it's very important. I've studied this very carefully. I recognize we don't like the government being involved, but we, the people of, over the last 60 years, have made a lot of decisions. We have made them and agreed with them, and they have resulted in some massive unfunded mandates to the hospitals and to the doctors. Those unfunded mandates to the hospitals and the doctors can be summed up this way. If a person is at risk of dying or losing a limb or something similar, and they can't afford to pay for medical care, you are obligated to care for them.
At a hospital, not you particularly,
no,
Chris.
No, even if a guy walks into a doctor's office and he's bleeding or something and he's in a crisis, the doctor cannot say, go away, you can't pay me. We have all agreed that that's got to be the way it is. At the same
time... Not all
time,
of us, but a very strong majority.
No, no, we the people of the United States, if we're speaking about the vast majority, so we voted it into being.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have this problem in that there's preventive care that keeps people who are living a long time, we're living much longer, from having money, though. Steadily, the price of medical care has gone up, and one of the biggest reasons the price of medical care has gone up, perhaps the largest single reason economists seem to all agree on, is that we have a lot of people that our national consensus is the hospitals and doctors must care for, but they're not going to pay. But the government's not going to pay either, and the employers are not going to pay. Therefore, the rest of us see rising costs on everything to cover the people who are not paying. Now, that is not working.
Yeah, absolutely not
working. And so once once we, the people of the United States, determined that we are going to care for people, we are going to require doctors who are trying to make a living and hospitals that are trying to make a living
that have debts and payrolls to cover and
to
equipment
pay
to buy.
For all kinds of people who have no insurance and no money, who's going to pay for that? And you got to somewhere somebody's got to pay for it. And right now,
that's
everybody
what I meant by unfunded
right,
mandates.
Everybody who has health insurance is paying for the people who don't have health insurance. And some employers, in economics, it's called the free rider, the free riding or free rider issue, where some employers pay for health insurance for their employees. Outrageous. I mean, they've doubled in just a few years, the prices that they're having to pay, while other employers, particularly in areas like construction, pay nothing for their employees' health insurance. And when their employee is unable to work for them because they have gangrene in their foot or something like that, they shove them out onto the system where the employers who do pay for health insurance have to pay for the ones who don't. That's fundamentally unfair. And you, if you have health insurance, you know, Ted Cruz, let me give you an example. Ted Cruz on the Senate floor argued against removing all health care subsidies for Senate staffers, hard, and for senators, right? That was part of his debate. Do you know where he gets his health care coverage?
No.
His wife, he's on his wife's policy, 100% paid by Goldman Sachs. So it's no big thing to him. His wife has a job at Goldman Sachs. Therefore, everybody else should not get any assistance with health care. That doesn't make any sense to me.
The issue here is as soon as we as a group say we're going to use the word fair, we're going to say it's not fair for somebody to die if they could be treated. And that's a pretty, you know, that's almost right out of the ethics role-playing thing. If you've got somebody, you know, three people on the boat and food for whatever, you know, those things. Where who do you throw overboard? That's the question that we've all addressed as a nation. We've said, okay, if they show up at the hospital and they need care, we've got to give it to them. As soon as we do that, we've got to figure out how to pay for it.
Yeah, and that's the issue. It's not Medicare. It's not Medicaid.
Well,
we have determined that we don't want people dying outside of emergency rooms that could be treated in the emergency rooms.
What were you going to say, Chris?
Most of the cost associated with people who did not have health care or insurance or anything like that is, would you say that's 10% of the population that has that?
About 16% of the population does not have health insurance.
It depends on where you are, too. Because, for instance, just a few years back, the pre-emergency care director at Scott & White spoke to a club that I was involved in and talked about the difference in cost between Bell County and Travis County. Travis County, for one emergency ride, one ambulance ride, was twice the cost of one emergency ride in Bell County for the same distance. And the reason is because closer to 25% of the people in Travis County don't have insurance, and about 6% of the people in Bell County didn't have insurance because it's a very well-insured area here.
There's very, very, very strong, I mean strong to the approaching certainty evidence that the more people in a population who have health insurance, the lower the cost of medical care gets.
Now, this is the final piece here, and it's more in support of what your argument is, Chris. The areas that are not covered by insurance, voluntary procedures, plastic surgery, tummy tucks, gastric sleeves, these things, LASIK surgery, the quality has gone up and the price has dropped. Not just dropped a little bit, dropped drastically. In other areas, we're seeing insurance costs double in the last decade. In these procedures, we see the costs halved in the last decade. So when there is active involvement of the patient shopping around and doing research, it works. But if you're at an emergency room, you don't say, wait a minute, how much is that tourniquet that's saving my life? You say, save my life, and then we'll figure it out.
And it is a conundrum. But the real bottom line is here, if you're against something that is fixing a system, we have clear evidence that the prices are going down. come up with a better deal. And there's a terrible irony here, Chris, an irony that just goes right off the scale. Ronald Reagan envisioned a system whereby, because he was aware of the fact that people on group policies with major corporations or the government or whatever, pre-existing conditions are not considered and the cost of insurance is lower. And the quality of care is higher than on individual policies. And by the way, back then you could still buy an individual policy, which is almost impossible today because of cost. But what happens then is, when you have a situation where we make the determination like this, there's got to be a solution. And worldwide, we've made this determination in all the developed countries of the world that people, we're not going to allow people just to die.
Well, not all the developed.
Developed countries.
Russia could
Russia
be
is not considered
yeah,
a developed
yeah,
country.
All right, okay.
So what happens is, once you make that determination, the rest of the world basically has said, okay, the government will provide health care for everybody. End of argument, and just variations on that. In the United States, what we have proposed is if you don't have health care through your employer, we're going to set up a free marketplace and allow competition to get involved where different offerers of health insurance can come forward and offer you health insurance, and they've got to compete for your business. And then they're putting the pressure, and believe me, they already are putting the pressures on the hospitals to lower their costs so the given insurance company can be more competitive. And that's why the prices have come down, is because we've injected this huge element of free market competition into the system. Now, admittedly, at the same time, we say, look, you got to have insurance, and there's a reason for that. You may think you're young and healthy and you don't need insurance, but if you get in a motorcycle accident or a car accident and you wind up in the hospital and you're in intensive care for 2 years, who pays for that? You know, the point is, you expect the service, but you're not willing to pay for it. Therefore, get willing to pay for it.
I have one more thing. I do have a set of ideas that I think would be better for the whole system. I think I've got a
great... I want to hear it.
But the organization required
allow
for
everybody
it,
who's in really bad shape just to go ahead and die if they can't afford to pay for it.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. All right.
No. The time after the Great Depression, we had these massive fiascos in the securities world when we're talking stocks and bonds. People were committing fraud at a drastic level.
After the Great Depression?
The laws were starting to be created during the Great Depression and then after the Great Depression, talking about the fraud that took place. And one of the key components of this, the federal government decided they wanted to regulate the trade of stocks that when they cross state lines. That's all the federal government's allowed to regulate, right? Interstate trade, you know, when it goes outside of the state, they weren't allowed to do it. So the blue sky laws were passed. Every single state in our union passed a law that was very, very similar, and by very, very, I mean almost identical to every other state, saying that this is the law of the land.
Do you know why they're so similar and why they passed them?
Because they have to be similar in order to do...
No. States pass laws that are really... I mean, some states...
yeah, somebody wrote them and handed them to each legislature.
No, what happened was the federal government said, if you want to do IPOs in your state and you want to trade stocks across state lines, you have to pass a law.
Right. And what that's done is it's allowed a free market regulation of the sale of securities and bonds and everything else across the country. We don't have that in insurance. We have the opposite. We have every single state regulating its own marketplace, and you can't take – this is a great example. Blue Cross Blue Shield has to have a separate organization in every state, and each of their plans have to be different for every state. So just Blue Cross Blue Shield has to have a series of plans that are different for every state that have to be competitive in every state. But you can't compare Blue Cross Blue Shield across state lines because they're not the same laws. They've got completely different mandates. They've got completely different fees.
What's
they've
that,
got
What's that got to do with Obamacare?
Very simply, there is a solution to this. Obamacare is trying to make a marketplace in each state.
Right.
If each state took it on their own prerogative to
You are kidding me.
That's why I'm saying it's, it would take a lot more organization to say. I mean, right now I see it as a pretty clear impossibility. But if we could do that, if we could, the states have to give up something to do that, though. In New York, they get fees from each insurance company. In Texas, they get fees from each insurance company. And they would begin to lose that if it became a national thing rather than a state thing. That is the issue at hand, and it's one that is more difficult.
Chris, there's two. You ask a question. What are the big causes of the rise in health insurance or the rise in of medical costs? Number one, I told you, was the uninsured 16% who don't get regular medical care, and as a result, when they hit the emergency room where we, by law, are required to treat them, they're in far worse shape than if they've gotten preventive care, which is extremely counterproductive. The second one is the last year of a person's life. Now, we really haven't completely addressed that yet, but it's getting there. Interestingly enough, despite the fact that the Affordable Care Act was trying to set up a panel at the national level to set up guidelines for this, by the way, they didn't work because it was so strongly opposed and probably wasn't a good idea anyway. It turns out that because of the anticipated competition that the insurance companies are facing, this is really good. They have gotten together, or not gotten together, but they put the pressure on the hospitals, and because of Obamacare, I love this, the Medicare requirements were changed. So now, if you are dying, and everybody agrees you're dying, you don't stay in ICU or in the hospital. You go to a care facility for people who are dying, and their objective there is not to try to keep you alive as long as possible, but to keep you as comfortable as they can.
Hospice.
Well, that's it, hospice. But the point is, prior to Obamacare, there was very little funding for a hospice. Did you know that? As a matter of fact, in some cases, you couldn't. For instance, Medicare would not pay for hospice. Obamacare changed that and said, if everybody agrees, this person is dying, including their family.
Sure, I'm not arguing the point that we need some help to help get people to be able to get insurance across state lines,
right,
and to be able to get these things.
Okay,
which is fine.
That's all in the law.
But the problem is when you pass a law that has a massive amount of 750 to 1,000 pages of rules and regulations.
Like every other law.
It's impossible to administer in any form or any fashion. And when the federal government...
Wait a minute. That's not true. That's not a true statement, Chris.
If you can't... And there's absolutely no way people
the
can
securities,
understand 750 pages to 1,000 rules and regulations.
Absolutely.
Understand this.
Do you have a mortgage on your house?
I do, and it's a pain in the butt.
Okay.
But
you know what? You were able to get a mortgage on your house.
And it's based on the same kind of regulations.
And before we had mortgage regulations from the federal government, only a very tiny percentage of the people in the United States could get mortgages. You had to be incredibly wealthy to get a mortgage.
And what happened to the mortgage industry? The federal government got involved more and more, tell everybody they can get a house, everything else.
No.
There is a balance beam that we walk in the United States. It's walked everywhere. And that balance beam is how much control do we give to the government and how much do we keep for ourselves?
And it's more and more
on
a regular basis.
Chris,
more and more of it is being given up.
Chris, let me explain something about the mortgage crisis. If you want to go study it, you'll find out the same thing I did. When we deregulated and got the government out of – when we did away with Glass-Steagall and we got the government out of that business and stopped regulating it, the private sector, countrywide, all kinds of companies, Lehman
– Bank of America.
Basically started packaging up mortgages outside of the Fannie Freddie system and offering nothing down mortgages to everybody, packaging them together and selling them at – really phenomenal profits.
Yeah, the Glass-Steagall Acts, there were a series of acts that were passed just after the crash of 29 that basically said that if you're an investment bank, those are stockbroker type people that do IPOs, You cannot be part of a commercial bank. That's where you deposit your paycheck. Because the mortgages and the reserves there have to be kept in a way that is not dangerous and risky, which is the definition of the investment bank. When we passed the laws to deregulate that in the late 90s and into 2000, to remove aspects of Glass-Steagall to allow investment banks to own commercial banks and vice versa.
Basically use your deposits to finance mortgages that are very risky.
That's when commercial banks started packaging up mortgages and selling them for large amounts of money to people other than Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They sold them to investment banks. The investment banks then sold them to each other. There was a marketplace for mortgages and big mortgage packages before that. It was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they had very clear guidelines on what they accepted. When they had to get into competition with Morgan Stanley and with Countrywide and with
Lehman Brothers
and with Bear Stearns, then they started trying to get more competitive. And those were some things that should not have happened, but they did.
By competitive, we, the public, demanded high interest rates. And the way you get a high interest rate is take a greater risk. And so the investment banks went down to the private. Now, this has nothing to do with the government. It was outside of the government regulation.
Right.
Went down to private mortgage brokers and builders and said, let's get a lot of high interest mortgages because people are demanding high interest on mortgage bonds. Well, high interest mortgages, by definition, are the ones that people get who are terrible credit risks.
See, Chris, I think you and I agree on a lot of things. I think we both kind of fall, not as a Republican, not as a Democrat, kind of in the middle where the individual should have the rights. I would almost say libertarian, except that there's enough libertarians out there that I think are complete idiots that I would not put myself in even that pool. The concept here is that we have to regulate laws in our land that are dangerous to everyone else. Murder is an easy one. You know, murder's bad. You can't do that. And we have to regulate that. When people are stealing from other people that are intelligent people and know how to protect themselves and yet are still being stolen from, then that is the role of the government to come in and say, we've got to protect you from that. You are a smart person. You are well protecting yourself, but you can't protect yourself from this, because it's too complex. It's never a good compromise, but it is better than what was before. And in the case of Obamacare, I don't know that it was much better than before, but I do think it was slightly better than before. I don't think we are done with this thing yet. We've got to fix it. There's too many broken things.
Right.
But to say just repeal it all is not good either, because we would go back to something that's actually worse than what we have today.
And the law itself was passed the way it was. And it's not just, I mean, I'll give the big Democrats credit. They pass the law. They'll force that stuff down your throat and get it done.
Yeah.
Which I like.
Zero Republican votes in the House on it.
The Republicans had the chance, and they had all three, you know, the House, the Senate, and the presidency to fix the, the income tax and do all these things. They didn't do it.
They didn't do it.
So they didn't do it. They had the chance to make a flat tax, whatever it was, simplify the tax code, get it done. They didn't do all those things. And so I'm not disagreeing with anything that the Republicans have been idiots about, you know, lowering tax with the spending, you know, raising spending. And they're great. That does a lot for us, right? But my thing is that when you pass this massive bureaucrat, you know, this huge law with all these bureaucrats and everything else, and then you exempt yourself and you exempt your buddies, then to me it just
whoa,
doesn't
whoa,
make sense.
Whoa, they aren't exempted.
Did Obama not be able to go along and tell people that they're exempted from the law?
The law allows for delays and exemptions under special circumstances, and as long as they meet the special circumstances, like where the workers would wind up with less benefits, he has allowed them to keep, but they're not above the ceilings. He's allowed the employers to continue to pay the better benefits.
So the law allows exemptions.
Yes.
And certain benefits.
The law has certain parameters. The law has certain parameters under which it allows the president, actually the administration, to allow some flexibility. Not exemption, flexibility. There's a world of difference there.
It's not a big world.
you know, I mean, it doesn't say you don't have to obey the law. It's just that there's a provision in the law that says you can appeal to this board, and if the president or actually the administration says, okay, that's within the boundaries, they set up a special board to judge situations in case the law makes things worse, for example, for employees. If inadvertently, and that happens with any law, there's something negative comes out of that law where the employees of a certain corporation have enjoyed certain benefits, and it's been, and they're not outrageous, there's a ceiling on them, and the company wants to continue to offer more benefits than the law mandates, and the president, if it's for a major corporation, the president has the right to say, okay, you can continue to offer the better benefits.
I think one of the major problems that the Republicans did, one of the major mistakes that they made, was in labeling it Obamacare. Because I think that's detrimental to the Republican cause for a long ways. We've got to play some commercials. Chris, thank you very much for the call. It's been stimulating.
All right. Have a good weekend. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We're going to go commercials, and we'll be back on the other side. And by the way, we don't know what's going to be in the commercials, and we don't approve them in advance. I just thought I'd warn you about that. So we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we've only got about 5 minutes left in the
less
hour.
Less than that this hour.
We have less than 5 minutes. We have 4 minutes. We
left this hour.
Now we have 4 minutes and
we're just going to do
47 seconds.
A countdown now.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to raise something here that since we only got a few minutes left, I wanted to talk about an issue that I think is very important. I was looking at CNN online yesterday evening.
Good stuff.
And, well, I don't know if it's good stuff or not, but
good subject.
Well, what I saw in there was amazing. There was and we get a call coming in. So let me defer what
we'll,
I got to
we'll
say.
We'll do that
next
hour because I've
okay?
got some stuff to say along the same subject.
Okay. So we got a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Listen, you know, it's just something that I've been thinking about, you know, because I don't understand it, and y'all are in the business of explaining it to me. Why is gold so important for people to purchase and buy and keep?
Okay.
You know, okay, I'm going to get off the
All right.
air.
All right. Good question. And a very short answer, it's not.
Yeah. It's a commodity just like
it is.
Piles of dirt or rock. Or if you think of limestone, why is it important for someone to own limestone?
Well, now,
and
limestone,
that is because you can use it to build houses.
But I don't know what you can use gold for other than it is a very limited use of gold in the industrial world, and you can build jewelry out of it. And there is a fundamental belief that is embedded in most cultures that gold ought to be worth something, even if it's not.
Yeah, I think it's very much like, this is another time we're going to get into the baseball area, baseball cards. The reason why baseball cards are valuable is only because people want to buy them at some point. Well, what if people weren't interested in baseball anymore? Well, then the baseball cards would not be valuable. Well, wait a minute. We can't say that that would ever happen because baseball is a great sport.
Gold doesn't have a sport. Gold is almost a religious belief. Fundamentally, over a long period of time, gold goes down in value. And I realize people don't like that. But if you look at the buying
Truth.
Power of an ounce of gold 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 600 years ago, you will find it was phenomenally higher than it is today. The price of gold today, for example, if we adjust for inflation, in other words, in terms of buying power, is only about a quarter of what it was in 19, somewhere between a quarter and a half of what it was 40 years ago. And there'll be a short period of time when it goes up because there's something called manias. People are crazy. People collectively can go collectively crazy and firmly believe that something is either worth a lot of money or not worth very much money at all. That's called market inefficiency, and we profit from that tremendously because if everybody else is buying something, we get really, really interested in selling it.
John Templeton said
right.
to be a conscientious
right.
investor. When the rest of the world wishes to buy something, be nice and sell it to them. And
That's
when
right.
everyone wants to sell something, be nice and buy it from them.
The bottom line to investing is that if something produces utility, if something is making life better, more efficient, more productive for the rest of the world, then it's worth something. Go ahead.
Yeah, we are about out of time for this hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111.
Or you can reach us toll-free, again, voicemail at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. During the week, that's not voicemail. There's actually a person that will answer that.
Really?
You can also contact us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to some podcasts. So until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.